Not a coffee drinker, or you already had your coffee?
I try to do coffee in case of emergencies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so like if I'm out hella late and I'm like, I don't want to fall asleep on the road, I'll drink a cup of coffee, or if I'm just fucking exhausted from the day before.
Yeah.
But so that way I don't need a lot, because you know how you can get like used to coffee and then you need more stronger stuff?
That's a myth. That's I don't know. No, I easily drink 1 to 2 cups a day. Some days I'll have 3 cups.
Wow.
But they're these size cups.
Oh, just like a regular mug.
Yeah, it's like a regular size cup. And so this is my 2nd cup of the day. And today's going to be a really long day. So I'm definitely going to treat myself to a Dutch Bros.
I was going
to
say.
Maybe around 8 o'clock to get me through the last part of the, because I'm going to drive Lyft all night.
Oh, okay, yeah. See, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, if you're trying to do actively something, I would definitely, but in the morning, I'm usually a morning person, so I'm like, I'm midday, I'm good to go.
Oh, really? Yeah. Really? Angel Castro, how the hell are you, my friend?
Good, good. Thank you for having me, Jesse.
Thanks for being here. I feel like, did I not message David Rodriguez? Was he not in that group message where I sent to a bunch of people saying, I got to get you guys on. When can we do it?
You know, I didn't check who was in the message, but I know you sent it to several people.
Yeah, I think I forgot to include David. I don't know. But there's, to me, when I started comedy, I started with a group of friends and, you know, like Emily Peterson, and that's all I could really think of right now off the top of my head. And then the pandemic started. And then we like started and then stopped again and then started again.
Uh-huh.
So to me, when comedy started, it was me, you, David, and Ashley Monique.
Yes.
That I would run into all the times at open mics. And to me, you guys are like my third wave of comedy brothers and sisters, because that it feels that way to me. I don't know if it feels that way to you at all.
Thank you,
but it feels that way to me. So like, seeing the success that you and David and Ashley are all having right now on your own terms and at your own levels, is really a joy to watch.
Oh, thanks, man. No, I definitely remember seeing you all the time. I think my first mic was at Vince's. I think that's where we met, right?
Maybe I remember you at right up the street at this mic that didn't last very long. Was it Alvin Duke's mic right here on Del Paso Boulevard?
The one where he was like a lodge or something? Where
it was like was it at the Elks Lodge?
Yeah.
I remember one time somebody like told a girl in the audience, "You look like you've been shot," and she lifted up her shirt to show like 5 gunshots.
Oh shit. And she was like, "You're on the money."
Yeah. That's where I remember. I think I had seen you guys before, but I think that's the first place that maybe I didn't feel safe when I clung to you. And I had to look around the room, and I was like, let me see. Let me see who I can rely on here.
That's funny. I remember that room. It was pretty fun, man. Dude, any room that Alvin runs, I feel like just his energy as a host.
I told Alvin recently that I am not a fan of chaos, but Alvin can control the chaos.
Oh, absolutely.
Like no other. Shannon Battle can do it too.
Yeah.
You know, but that room, yeah, I wouldn't have been there if it was anyone else but Alvin.
he definitely made sure that the comics, and I was worried because I don't think I had met Alvin before that, so I was like, I don't know what he's like, but he's super fucking nice. He's such a personable guy.
Yeah, and he could when he poses for pictures, he's like mean mugging, you know, and like,
I think,
and
that's
when
just his resting
no
face,
that's
man.
Just his, that's what I'm saying is like, he doesn't seem approachable, but he's super nice and super approachable.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's like, once you like add him on social media and stuff, he's like the most adorable dad ever. Always talking about his son.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah. Yeah. There's some comics where I'm like, I've known him for 3 years. I'm like, you got a kid? I've never heard you talk about your kid once. But Alvin, definitely, his son is a top priority in his life. You can tell he's a good guy.
Oh, absolutely. He's a good dad, too, for sure.
We were talking a little bit about about coffee, and you were saying that you'll save it for like if you got a long drive ahead of you.
Yeah.
And I think like, and that kind of like kind of leads me down a path that I wanted to go with you. One of the things that I really admire about you and David, oh my God, you guys are some road dogs. Dude, how much driving do you think you've put? How many miles do you think you've put on your car since you started doing comedy? Has it been the same car?
It has been the same car. I think this year I'm clocking in about 24,000.
Okay, that's not crazy, but no, that's not a little bit either.
I mean, you know, it's one of those things where the moment I started comedy, I kind of like made peace with that. Like everything I had heard of in like podcasts and interviews was you're going to be on the road and you're more than often going to be by yourself. So you just kind of have to like make peace with the idea that you're going to be driving a lot.
Oh, wow. So that was part of it when you decided to make the leap.
Yeah. Once I decided to jump into comedy, it was all in for me, and it's always been that way. So when we first met at Vince's, David and I, one of my first conversations with him is like, hey, I want to go visit other towns. I want to go do comedy in far away places. I'm looking for partners to drive with. And that's actually how him and I connected, because we both live in Davis.
Okay, I wasn't sure if like you and David were college buddies.
No, I'm way older than David.
Oh yeah, but college, anybody, like you can get in at any age, and like you hear about these, you know. But David is like very super young, and you're like in your early 30s.
Early 30s, and David's in his early 20s.
Yeah. Right. So you jumped into comedy in your 30s.
Right before that, I was 29 when I started.
Why didn't you start when you were 18, 19? What was the holdup, or what made you finally make the jump?
Well, comedy was never really part of the plan until I was like 29, 28. Really, my whole life has always been about going to grad school, going to law school in particular. And mm-hmm. And since I was like in fifth grade, I was like, I'm going to be a lawyer. That was my job in my head, you know? And so for the longest time, that's what I focused on. And it wasn't until I got there that I was like, I fucking hate this.
Oh, man.
But it's one of those things where you don't, I mean, you know, I'm first generation. My parents are immigrant. I don't have anybody in my family who's a lawyer, who's like gone to even college.
Yeah.
My mom didn't graduate high school. My dad didn't graduate high school. So it's like everything.
We have very similar backgrounds. Yes.
Yeah. So you know what it's like. It's like you don't have anybody that you can really turn to and really ask, like, what's this like? What's this career like?
Were your parents the one pushing you to be a lawyer, or was it something that you discovered on your own? Because like all my parents wanted for me was to have a job with insurance. Like they were like, yeah, that's, yeah, con sus beneficios, mejor, yeah, tienes beneficios. Like that was the most important thing to them, was like, get a job and you have insurance. And that, like, they didn't push college. They said, if you want to go to school, great, we'll help you, but if you want to just work and a job with benefits, that's sufficient.
That's kind of what my dad was like. My dad was always just don't be lazy.
Uh-huh. Well, we couldn't be lazy.
Right?
Yeah.
You're like, you sit down for like 5 minutes after school. It's like, hey, huevón, put this out. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was my dad's thing. My dad's thing is like, I don't really care what you do. Just don't be lazy. Uh-huh. Don't be lazy. Work hard and be a good person. That was my dad.
Okay.
My mom, on the other hand, she kind of has like a different experience growing up. She's the oldest of 10.
Ooh.
And she was a great student. But what happened is, because she was the oldest, my grandpa made her drop out of school and work to help support the family. Mm-hmm. Back in Mexico.
What part of Mexico?
Well, she grew up jumping around a lot, but I think where they mainly settled in was either Mazatlan or Guadalajara. Okay. So like they lived portion of their life in Mazatlan, portion of their life in Guadalajara. And yeah, she's been working since she was like 10 years old, mm-hmm. helping him out, selling things on the street. My mom's done all kinds of jobs. But so for her, she always liked going to school, but at some point she just didn't have that opportunity anymore. So when she had us, she was like, you don't have a fucking choice. You have this opportunity. You better make the most of it.
And when you say us, how many of there were you?
Growing up, it was four of us. It was me and I have three younger sisters.
Okay, so you're the oldest of four.
I'm the oldest of four. But then it gets really confusing. This is a typical Mexican novela story. When I was 16 years old, we found out my dad was actually my stepdad.
At 16?
Yeah, when I was 16.
And at 16, were you then finally going like, I don't look anything like this dude.
Dude, it's funny because I was like, my first train of thought is like, all this time people have been saying that we look alike. Lying to my face.
Oh man. Yeah, so did that make you seek out your real father, or is that something you don't even fuck with because like this is dad?
No. So my dad's my dad. Dad's raised me since I was so small. He's my dad. You know what I'm saying? Happened is when we found out he was my stepdad, he offered to take us to take me to meet my biological dad. Mm-hmm. He was like, I know where he's at, I know where he works, say the word and I'll take you. Like, he's such a fucking good guy, you know what I'm saying? But I wasn't going to do my dad dirty like that. I was like, no, I don't know this fucking stranger. You're my dad.
Yeah.
And so
he could have seeked you out as well, right? Like, he knew he had kids.
Yeah, of course. And, yeah. And that's where it gets even more like a novella, because what happened, like, about 10 years.
Did he live across the street or something?
Oh, dude. About 10 years after I found out that he was out there, we went to go bury my grandpa in Mexico. And my grandpa... It's so fucking weird.
Did you have to wake up in the middle of the night to drive to Mexico?
We flew, yeah. And it was the middle of the night because he died of an accident. But what happened is my grandpa is my dad's uncle.
Your grandpa is your dad's uncle.
Right, but he raised my dad, so we've always known him as grandpa, right? So because he always called him dad.
Uh-huh.
So when we went to go bury him, my dad was like, hey, I'm going to go see my biological dad. I don't know if you guys want to come and support. And, you know, he was very emotional and we wanted to be there for him. So we're like, yeah, of course, let's go visit him. Turns out the guy had like severe Alzheimer's and he couldn't communicate. And so I saw that interaction between people trying to talk to him and the guy just kind of like blank staring at stuff. Wow. And I was like, fuck, what if my biological dad ends up with this shit, you know? And I never get a chance to have a conversation with the dude.
Uh-huh.
So after that trip, I was like,
How old are you at this time?
25.
Okay. So you're processing
adult stuff.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what? I want to meet this guy. I want to give him a chance to kind of tell his side of the story. I know what happened from my mom just in general, but you know, moms, they have their feelings about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I want to just listen to him, see what he's like. And so I tracked him down. Turns out the dude lived 15 minutes from us.
Wow, that's some ranchito shit.
Yeah,
like, right, like, just this is life on the ranch. Like, yeah.
It's funny because he used to be a ranch hand.
Yeah.
He carried on those traditions.
Okay, so you made peace with that? Did you? And is that book closed now, or do you guys keep in touch?
We don't keep in touch. It was weird. Like, when I finally met him, he wanted to like jump into being father and like, here, come to Mexico with me and meet your family. I was like, what, nah, dude?
Yeah, you're like, I got a life.
I got a family. I got a dad. I just wanted to hear you out. And he was a little sketchy about some of the things he did or didn't talk about when we met. But I still, you know, I was like, if he wants to talk, I don't mind. But at one point he invited me to Christmas. This was like, maybe like 7 years ago, a little bit less. And he said, hey, come visit me and my family for Christmas. I was like, dude, I barely go home. If I go home, I'm going to go visit my mom and my dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And after that, I haven't heard from him.
All right, you did your thing.
No hard feelings, you know. Yeah. It's like I wasn't seeking but going back to the kid stuff, turns out he has like six kids.
Wow.
Six or five kids. So I have like six people that look like me somewhere in Oakland.
So when you finally met your dad, you're like, all right, I look like this fucker.
It was fucking weird, man. It was weird because I do kind of look like him, and at the same time I didn't want to look.
Did you get the thing? Because, like, I get this thing of, like, I look a lot like my mom's side of the family, right? And sometimes I'll be around my uncles and I'll be like, these guys look like me if I'd have worked hard. Like, they're more chiseled and just, like, like
grit.
Yeah, they're, like, tougher. They're, like, tougher versions of me.
Like, their hands feel like sandpaper when you
shave. Yeah. Did you get that feeling at all?
You know, no, I didn't get that feeling, but I definitely realized where I got my awkwardness. He was kind of an awkward, quiet guy. He didn't really talk much. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's why I'm like
that. Okay.
It's like, that's where I get my shitty social skills from.
Right. Okay. So then what? Okay, so you go to law school. You get burned out. You finish it?
I do. I did finish.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
The paper's on the wall.
It's right there. And I gave it to my mom. And I was like, here, stop bothering me.
I did the same thing with my diploma. It's at my mom's house. Yeah. Dude. Same thing. Yeah.
Didn't it feel good just giving it to them? Like, here you go. This is what you wanted.
Yeah. I'm like, here's the bill, too. Like,
did they help?
But she did. She helped. Oh, like, paid half of it, like, just handed it over.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
And said, here, take care of it. And, like, I was like, well, I'm going to pay, like, three-fourths of it. Like,
Hey, dude.
But, you know, she's like, no, do what you got to do. And but anyway, so then what made you, what called you to the stage? What?
To comedy?
To comedy.
Well, it was right around the time where I was like realizing that I hated school and writing and that kind of work, legal work, that I was just like, okay, if I know I don't like this, what do I actually enjoy? Like, what makes me happy? And mm-hmm. the only thing that has kept me sane throughout like the whole journey to law school and in law school has always been comedy. Like I would watch records. I've been listening to comedy. I didn't grow up out here. I grew up a little bit in Mexico, but listening to American comedy, I've been listening to it since I was like in high school.
What about Mexico, Spanish comedy? What about, okay, because I think that folks like you and I are so lucky to have grown up with the Three Stooges and La India María.
La India María.
Right? And Cantinflas.
Cantinflas, La India María, Tintán, Eugenio Derbez. You have Jorge Falcón. All these great comedians in Mexico that I describe Mexican comedy, especially back in those days, like character comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like you essentially develop a personality and a character, and then you put that character into different scenarios.
Yeah, yeah. I think, and then I think that harkens back to like Charlie Chaplin and yeah. like Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy, right? But I think also because I think everyone that kind of grew up like us, is there a little bit of Don Francisco?
Sábado gigante.
El mejor protesto para quedarse en casa. How much, like, right? It's all there.
Dude, every weekend, man. Every weekend.
Every weekend. And that was a show that we could watch with our grandparents and our mom and our uncle and our little nephew, like the whole family.
Well, see, that's the thing.
Well, that was the only option, too.
Yeah. Well, that. But in Mexico and even here in the U.S., like, I'll be honest with you, like, my family didn't really restrict us on comedy. Like, we would listen to La Hora Pico.
Because some of the humor was very blue, like, very, like,
but the thing
risque.
But the thing about Mexican comedy is there's a lot of wordplay and a lot of innuendos in that risque. Yes, so, yeah. So as a kid.
Very, very Benny Hill.
Yes. And yeah. So as a kid, if you don't pick up on it, it goes right over your head. So my parents were fine with us listening to the comedy from that kind of, background, or I guess that style of comedy, and they wouldn't really, because like, oh, they don't get it.
yeah but I think we reach a point, right, where we're like, oh, wait a minute, this is, oh,
that's what he's talking.
Yes. And then all the beautiful women on Spanish television, like all, like especially like on Sábado Gigante, they were just everywhere.
Beautiful women in the Spanish channels is like a part of the contract, I think. It's like a requirement.
Yeah.
I like, you know how some days now in some channels, like you must have diverse casts. Like over there, it's like you must have at least 15 beautiful women.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so, did you ever watch the show Caliente?
Yes, yes. Dude, my mom watched all those shows. Man, she's the one. Oh, God. Cristina?
Yes.
Oh, that was the best talk show ever. That was like the Mexican Oprah. Like, she was amazing. But like, my mom watched all of those shows.
She was Cuban, right?
Yeah, Cristina was Cuban, yeah. And then in the latter, it seems like in the last 20 years or 15 years, it was Despierta America.
Despierta America, Laura, mm-hmm. La Señora Laura or La Jueza Laura. They do a bunch of shows, man, all the time. And comedy is... I feel like sometimes comedy is unintentional in those kinds of shows, but they're still hilarious.
Yeah, like what about the fortune teller guy?
Or you're talking about Walter Mercado.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That was unintentionally humorous, I think.
Oh my God, his character. Y todo, todo, mucho, mucho amor.
It was like part of Juan Gabriel.
Yep.
Part.
Yep. Like, did you see the documentary?
No, there's a documentary about them?
Yeah, Lin-Manuel Miranda helped produce a documentary about, because he's Puerto Rican.
Yeah, yeah. But well, Lin-Manuel, not only is he Puerto Rican, but he grew up in New York while hip-hop was developing. Like, when, to me, like when hip-hop was a radical teenager. like he grew up like in the Wu-Tang, like the Tribe Called Quest era had just ended, and it seems to me like the Wu-Tang era had just begun. Like, he was there at the right time and was just like wasn't his dad like a politician?
I don't know.
Like, his dad was somebody big time, so he got to schmooze with all of the elite of New York.
Oh,
and,
shit.
And at the same time was hanging out on the streets, and like, he can spit. Like, have you heard, like, he's like amazing. Lin-Manuel.
No, yeah, no. So he produced the Walter Mercado documentary on Netflix. If you look it up, I forget the name of it off the top of my head, but if you look up just Walter Mercado, I'm sure it'll come up. Because Walter Mercado was also Puerto Rican, apparently. I didn't know this growing up. When I was growing up watching all these channels, I didn't know what, like, specific countries Latinos were from. I just knew they were all Latino.
Exactly. You know, I was the same way. They were all Mexican.
We were all speaking Spanish. That's all I know.
Yeah. And only now, like, as an adult, can I kind of pick up, like, if I hear somebody talking Spanish, I'm like, oh, these motherfuckers deaf right there. Right? You know? These motherfuckers right from the ranch, you know?
Yeah. Start picking up more of the accents.
Yeah. Did you grow up at all in Tijuana?
Not in Tijuana. I grew up in Guadalajara.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I was born out here in Oakland. But at 1 year old, I got taken to Mexico by my grandma, and I was living out there with her for a while.
And then when did you come back?
I came back like right around the time I started school, like about 6 years old.
Okay. Okay.
But then I would jump around a lot. Like, I would go, this house shows you how cheap it was to fly to Mexico back in the day. I would fly every summer break and every winter break.
Wow.
And then I did second grade and seventh grade out there.
Really? Uh-huh. Did you enjoy that, or was it like, I don't want to go? Like, you got to go.
No. Well, I mean, you know, I grew up out there as a kid. So like, for me, Mexico was home, man. Like, for the longest time when I moved out here, I was miserable. Mm-hmm. I was like, no one speaks Spanish, everybody speaks English, and I didn't know how to speak English, or I had to learn to speak English, and then I had to adapt. But like, the food tastes way better over there, at least it did for me growing up. And my grandma was the one that raised me, so I missed her. And like, all of a sudden I got this new strange person calling her my mom, and then whooping my ass every time I do something wrong. And I was like, my grandma would never do this. So I got very spoiled being out there, and so any chance I got to go back, I would. That's essentially what I would ask as a Christmas present, as a birthday present.
Oh, okay.
I was like, what do you want to do? I was like, can I just go to Mexico?
Nice. I think we got sidetracked. So what drew you to the stage? You said you grew up watching all these great comedy, English and Spanish.
Yeah.
And that's where I got sidetracked, because I definitely wanted to talk to you about like Sábado Gigante and all that. Oh, dude, wait, one last thing.
Yeah.
El Chavo del Ocho.
Oh, La Chespirito. Vicindad. Yeah, dude.
Man.
I still watch that show sometimes.
I remember when he passed away, somebody did the Chapulín Colorado heart, but it was a broken heart.
Oh.
That's right? Fucking, it still hurt.
It's in the feels, man.
And then somebody else did a thing of like Don Ramon welcoming him to heaven.
Because Don Ramon had already passed away.
And I cannot believe like how shook those deaths made me. Like, I was like, that's a part of my childhood.
Well, and generations of childhood, man. Because that show, Chavo del Ocho, I think was like renowned internationally. Like, all of Latin America,
and then
at
his
least.
Movies, like where he played soccer. Like, I never understood the movies that he was in. But he was in he would be in movies, and there was always soccer in the movies.
I don't think I've watched is it Chavo del Ocho movies?
No, not Chavo del Ocho movies, but what was his name?
Chespirito?
The actor.
Yeah.
I don't think we know his name.
I just know him as Chespirito.
So he acted in movies as well, and the movies were always centered, or the one movie was always centered around a soccer match, and and it was very like in Duck Soup when the Marx Brothers are playing football. It was like just comical like that.
Gags.
Yeah, it was very comical like that. Okay, so what drew you to the stage finally at age 29?
Yeah, well, it was just one of those things where, like I mentioned, you know, comedy was the only thing that kept me sane throughout school. So I was just like, I want to do this. I'm going to focus on I'm putting all in on comedy. And I started going to an open mic that they had at the Davis campus, because I still lived in Davis. There was an undergraduate group called the Stand-Up Comedy Club at Davis. It was called Stuck. It's still going around. It's a shout out to them. And they had like a showcase that they would do every couple of months. And if you came to their meetings and you performed for their meetings, they would like let you know if you were good enough to perform. So I started going to that, and my first time on stage is actually it'll be exactly 4 years ago at the end of this month.
Okay.
Where I got to perform for the first time on a showcase. And it was fucking incredible. I mean, looking back, I still have the clip. I'm like, those jokes are shitty.
I was going to say, do you still do any of that material?
There was like, every now and then I'll pull a joke because I'm like, that's a good premise. You know, and I'll try to dress it up and perform it a little bit better. But I definitely feel like it's just like with most comedy that you start out writing, it's like there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yeah, yeah. And I think also too, like when you're first starting out, people give you credit for like, oh, he just started, that was kind of funny. But like if you've like pulled those jokes out now, like 5-6 years in, they're like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah, and some stuff doesn't age well. Like I started learning, like one of my first joke told at the freaking show was a pronoun joke. It was my identifying pronoun, because at the time that was what everybody mm-hmm. was talking about. And I ended up realizing, I'm like, oh, everybody has a pronoun joke. Yeah. Like, I don't want to keep doing that kind of joke.
Yeah, right on. And so it's been 4 years now, huh? Sorry, yes, sir. I asked you right when you were taking a sip. I try to, sometimes I'll see you guys taking a sip and I'll try to prolong the question, but I had nothing after that.
No, you're good, man. Yeah, it's 4 years right when I started going to those meetings.
So then you were probably doing comedy about 5 or 6 months and then the pandemic hits?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I was starting to go with that club in Davis and I was going with them for a couple of months. And then I was like, you know what? This is not like what every podcast describes open mics as.
Mm.
So I was like, maybe I should start going out to like other places. That's when the idea of traveling started coming in, you know?
Did it trip you out? Because I imagine that Davis group is very supportive.
Yes.
And a good built-in audience.
Yes.
And it's nothing like Vince's on a Friday night.
Absolutely not.
So were you shocked like when you went to a real open mic? You're like, why aren't they listening?
Well, for those that aren't familiar, Vince's is a staple of the Sacramento comedy scene. Vince's Restaurante.
Oh, yeah, in West Sac. I love it, but I hate it too.
Oh, yeah. But it's a good, I feel like it's a good representation of what to expect at an open mic.
Yes.
And so when I finally went to Vince's, I was like, oh, this is what they meant to the podcast.
This is the depressing part.
This is why comedy's hard.
Yeah, this is the dark side of comedy right here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so when you come out to Vince, you start coming to Sacramento, or you start hitting mics, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't just, that's Penelope breathing heavy, by the way, guys. Because you don't just, because like going back to what I said about you, you're not just coming to Sacramento, you're going to Oakland, you're going where, like Sacramento was just part of your satellite, right?
Yeah, Sacramento was the first like city outside of Davis where I was just like, I got to make it out there to the mics. And then from there, I started venturing out to Chico, started venturing out to Oakland. This year I probably traveled my farthest down to Vegas and San Diego and Redding up north. I'm hoping to make a little bit, maybe make a trek out to Oregon.
I want
to
do that.
But maybe wait after the winter.
yeah. I want to do Oregon in the spring.
Yeah, yeah.
Seattle, Washington, like I want to get up there.
Yes, I want to visit up there. I'm just very weary of like the weather because my dad's a truck driver. And like he's made those drives out north in the winter, and he's always told me how like dangerous they can be, you know?
Yeah, I bet some horror stories.
Yeah, black snow. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
He's told me he's like,
well, black ice. Is it black ice or black snow? Well, same thing.
Black,
right?
Ice. Yeah. But I'm sure it starts out as snow.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Well, technically, no, I'm just kidding. right on. What's you recently went to Bakersfield?
Yeah, I was in Vegas late September.
I grew up in Bakersfield.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what? That's right.
Yeah, I grew up in Bakersfield, yeah.
Yeah. Bakersfield. Dude, it's
a tough town.
It's my third time going to Bakersfield.
Uh-huh.
And I enjoy it. I feel like
I feel like the comedy there is like what the crowd would be like very bro-y stuff. Like
bro-y.
Like kind of like, I think to me, Bakersfield, the population of Bakersfield is very much, I think I've said this before, like if Folsom and Roseville hooked up and had a kid, like that's Bakersfield.
I would have never known that. Folsom.
Yeah, that to me, that's Bakersfield.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I for me, it just feels like a little bit more of like a Fresno-ish.
Okay.
Fresno-ish, but I think Fresno has a lot more white people.
yeah, maybe. I don't know. It might be the same. No, I get
they're
the
not
comparison.
Too far from each other, right?
No, they're not at all. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to Fresno a lot. My girlfriend's from out there, so we travel to Fresno a lot. And so that's the communities I'm used to seeing. But Fresno is very much of like there's a white neighborhood and a nicer neighborhood where all the white people live.
right. They're like, this is Fresno. Yeah.
It's not. It's Clovis, but
I get it. Have I seen your name attached to like producing shows yet or hosting shows? What are you doing? Like, it seems like you're like, to me, you seem like a natural host.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah. I got passed not too long ago at Laughs Unlimited. So I had,
oh, my, congratulations.
Thank you. I got my first hosting weekend in August. I had it.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. And then this year I made it my goal to try to produce a couple of shows. I think up to this point I'm at, maybe I've done about 8 shows.
Okay.
A couple different venues. But it's a whole nother beast, man. Producing a show versus performing on one.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
And did you find it stressful? Like, are people going to show up? Like, that's what stresses me out the most.
I think as a comic, that's what stresses me out the most, because you want it to be a good show, both for the audience and for the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the comics, it's like, as long as you're taking care of them, as far as like being fair and pay, and then also providing a good audience, I think you're happy as a comic.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, that's the thing. It's like, you're always wondering like, oh, are people going to show up? Are people going to show up?
Yeah. It's so stressful. Like I love producing shows, but I hate it just as much.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I think it's a necessary part of being a comic. It's like learning to produce a good show would give you an appreciation for when you're part of one. And also, helping you realize going to different shows and participating in different shows will help you realize how you can be a better producer, and mm-hmm. realizing where you're lacking, like, oh, maybe I should change where I put my speakers, or maybe I should change how I sit audience members, or where I ask the comics to be, where I light them from, just little things like that I don't think you appreciate when you're just performing. But when you start producing, you're like, oh, I can make this a way better experience.
Yeah. I helped Jess Harding produce a show last night at Fox and Goose.
How'd it go?
I think it went really well. It went really well, but I thought it was so funny because we were both walking around doing little tiny tweaks to the room, and at one point I didn't notice, but she had moved we had a stool and a little table
uh-huh.
right in front of the microphone, right? Mm. And at one point, I looked at where the stool was, and I was like, I think I want it right here. And I moved it like 3 feet, and I moved the table like 2 feet and to the right. And she looked at me and laughed. She's like, I literally just moved them from there. But
what was your guys' reasoning for moving it?
Just, it felt right.
there was a tingling sensation.
And the funny thing is that once the show started, the tables were set back so far from the stage that every comic just naturally grabbed the mic and walked closer to the audience and left the table and the stool that we had meticulously set up right there. And so next show I'm gonna move that
set the stuff closer to the audience.
Set the stage a little bit closer to the audience.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. It's like, you wouldn't, other than producing a show, there's no way for you to realize that. Like, even if you're performing on a show, you would have just naturally moved closer to them, but you wouldn't have worried about where they're at right before going on stage.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and it's weird, man. I applaud you guys for working together. I know it's hard to produce shows with other people, just because of little things like vision and what your vision is mm-hmm. versus what your partner's vision is. People who can work together in groups, I applaud them. That's not easy.
it's not easy at all. I've tried to produce, and then the thing with Jess Harding is that, like, I've seen her have success already.
Mm-hmm.
So when she put out that she kind of was maybe looking for a co-producer, I was like, you know what, I would work with them. You know,
yeah,
like, she already had a great reputation, and I'd been to her shows. I'd been on her shows.
And yeah, I was she like, puts oh. on good shows.
I was like, oh, I would absolutely try to attach my name to hers because I think she does great work. And I was like, but at the same time, I was like, I hope that she feels the same way about me. And it's like, all right, let's do it. And she did. She was like, yeah, let's work together, you know. And I was like, I was so excited about
that. Well, I know you've produced shows in the past. I think I was part of one of your backyard shows.
Yeah, dude. You hosted a Backyard Funnies, right? Yeah,
thank you for having me, man.
No, thanks for doing it. It was a Cinco de Mayo?
I believe so. It was. Yeah,
it was a Cinco de Mayo show. Yeah, it was a Cinco de Mayo show. Was it? I don't remember if it was this year or last year, but
it might have been this year.
Yeah.
Dude, thank you for having me.
Were you on it? But weren't you also, did you also do like a guest spot on a Backyard Funnies like last year? When it really was in the backyard?
No, I don't think I got a chance to do
it. I think David did.
Maybe. Yeah. We always get confused. We're both Mexican and have Mexican names.
They confuse all the Mexicans. They lump us all in, right? They're like, well, let's just book one of them.
Wasn't it, wasn't somebody, I remember somebody mentioned that we were all, you, me, and David were just different stages of Mexican. Who said that? I don't remember. I just thought it was hilarious. They said it was like a Pokemon evolving.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. I thought it was so funny the roast that you did, the roast joke you did of me, of that like I look like the uncle that would let you sip a beer but then ask you for $20 at the end of the
You talking about Alvin Duke's show?
Yeah, an Alvin show. Yeah. You're said at Alvin Duke's comedy competition has kind of gone down as legendary. Really? Are you aware of that? That
no.
Everyone like keeps saying like, well, you know, a fucking Angel did.
I had no idea, man.
But what you did that night, I have been saying this about comedy competitions, is that you need to just watch the crowd, and when you go up there, just give the crowd what they want.
Right.
Like your set just goes out the window. And what so for those that weren't there, there was a comedy competition of it's monthly. Alvin Duke hosts it at the Union.
Yes.
And he has like 15, 16 comics, gives them 4 minutes. Was it four or five?
I believe so. It was four.
And you know, and the winner gets a set. Well, Angel, instead of doing a set, went up late in the night. Not knowing when you're going to go up.
Yeah, because it's a bucket pool.
Yeah, it's a bucket pool. And then you just roasted everyone that had gone on before you, and the crowd fucking loved it. What made you do that? Did you go there that night thinking you were going to do that? Or did you, as the night went on, you were like, fuck it, I'm going to do this?
Well, I didn't.
What was the game plan going into it, and how did it evolve?
The game plan was nebulous, man. I didn't know what I was going to do just because I had never been part of the comp. I had been to the Union before, I think a year before that, and performed at Alvin's Showcase. But I had never been to the competition, so I was like, I didn't know what to expect. And when I finally got there, I was just like, oh, I know these judges, because it was yourself, it was Gabriel Alexander, Shannon Battle, and obviously Alvin. And so I was like, okay, you guys have seen all my material. Like, I've been around you guys long enough and perform on different showcases that all you guys know my material. There's no way my material is going to win me the night.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little bit bummed out at that point. I was like, oh, fuck. I thought it was going to be different judges because maybe you guys hadn't heard my stuff. But then I was like, okay, well, if I know I'm not going to win on material, let me just have fun with it. And I was like, okay, how can I have fun tonight? I was like, okay, I know everybody here. I know all the comics. I know they'd be cool if somebody talks a little smack, you know? Let me just roast them all.
Yeah.
And so I sat in the front and I listened to everybody who went up before me and their set. And I tried to like jot down a quick like note on like something I could roast them about it. And that's the move. When my name was finally pulled out the bucket, I was like, all right, time to go up and do this.
Yeah. And you did it. And when we realized what was happening, you know, and then I saw the order you were kind of going in.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I think I'm next. I'm not going to give him the gratitude of, so I walked out of the room and I heard it. I was like, yeah. I was like, I timed that perfectly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the order was whoever went before me. Yeah, so, yeah. So you were definitely on the map.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm in his crosshairs. And you took the win away from Lexi by like a point. Like, oh,
she did great too, by the way. Lexi did awesome. I think she also roasted a couple of us too.
Yeah. Well, Lexi's a roaster, but you're not known as a roaster, are you? You've done some, haven't you?
I've done two roasts like over a year ago. Uh-huh. Both of them I lost.
Yeah.
I think what I realize is that I have like this certain uncomfortableness I have roasting people in front of Publix. Cause like if it's just you and me and we're talking shit and we're just like getting along and like,
that's,
you know,
part of clapping it. Yeah.
That's, I could do that. That's perfectly easy. But when it's like an audience, it's like, I feel like this guilt and this like uneasiness about roasting somebody.
And there's this fucking, Roman gladiator energy.
Yes.
At the roast battles that kind of gets to me is a little bit scary. I'm like, oh, this is some crazy energy.
But I think that's what you need to be successful as a roaster.
No, like, they're amazing. Yeah. I can't harness that.
You know, same here, man. I can't do that to people, or, you know, it's just not it. That Roman gladiator is not in me.
Yeah. Some of these other social paths though. they love. I mean, they're great, you know. And it's like, and the people you least expect, like Ashley Monique.
She's Lexi, a killer. She Lexi's a killer too.
Morgan, you know,
Morgan Anderson. Yeah, I am. Dude, I've heard all the roast of Logan Farr. Obviously, Josh Means. Yeah. Josh Means, like, you give him 2 minutes and he'll find something to roast you.
Yeah, dude, sometimes I don't even want to talk to Josh because I'm just like, this guy's just loading up material for when he finally gets me in his crosshairs.
Like, dude, I've seen Josh, like, hear somebody talk smack about him or his set, and like,
oh, the next
thing he does is just roast you for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Deservingly.
Dude, you open that door.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, those roast battles are a lot of fun. I'm still too chicken to jump in. David asked me if I would roast him.
Uh-huh.
And luckily I had something booked. So I told him no, and I was like, fuck, I wonder what I think I would have had to have done it.
I've gone up against, that was one of the battles I did was with against David. Uh-huh. I think that was my first roast battle.
Okay. All right.
He won. Outlandishly won.
I think I went to that one, but I can't remember them.
David's a good roaster, man. He has that gladiator mentality, as small of a frame as he has.
Well, I think he's had to fight back his whole life. He's had to fight against that little guy syndrome his whole life, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I leave it to the experts who are way better and more comfortable with it. I love still supporting. I'll go watch a roast battle. I'll go, you know, participate in it as an audience. And if I'm ever asked to judge, I'd be willing to. But I just don't think I could roast somebody. On stage. But like that night at the competition, I felt very comfortable because I knew every comic there, and so I was like, I think they'll be fine if I roast them a little bit.
Yeah, it was absolutely fine. And I was hanging out. Amber Pace was on the show I was on last night, and we mentioned that. And I told her, I was like, oh, he's going to be on my podcast tomorrow. She's like, yeah, tell him I still remember that. She's like, you tell him.
Amber Pace is a cool person. She was so, like, happy and positive about it. She's like, that was such a good roast. And I was like, oh, thank you.
Yeah, yeah, that was a fun night. I think I've judged it 3 times now.
Yeah,
I just message him every time, like, dude, I'll judge. It's so much fun. It's so much fun. And
wait,
and,
so have other people roasted each other at that competition before?
That was the first time that somebody did that.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
okay.
But it really goes in line with like my advice to comics at a competition is just throw your set out the window and give the audience what they want.
Yeah,
just give them what they want.
Yeah, and I knew all you degenerates would love to. Your shit talking.
Yeah, crazy. A bunch of comics want to hear somebody talk shit. Yeah. Yeah, we loved it. Hey, listen, Angel, having a great time chatting with you, but we wrap up the podcast with a segment called 5 Easy Questions.
Okay.
And I used to send them to you guys ahead of time.
Oh.
But I stopped doing that because I don't know, I probably just got high and forgot.
But, you want impromptu.
Yeah, impromptu. They're not difficult questions. Are you ready to play 5 Easy Questions with me?
Let's do it.
All right, Angel Castro, who or what inspires you?
There's a comic right now that I see hustling and doing work, and his name is Cordae Snell. He inspires me a lot.
Oh, I love Cordae. Yeah.
Every time I talk to him, I'm like, fuck, man, I need to up my game.
Is he Oakland?
He's Richmond area.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's from Richmond. But he's such a cool dude, man. I feel like I vibe with him every time I talk to him, and every time I hear him, I'm like, I walk away going, I need to do something more.
Okay.
So he inspires me.
Cordae Snell. Yeah. Shout out. Richmond comic, Cordae Snell.
Yeah.
All right. What are you currently binging? Like, what are you just like soaking up? It could be a TV show, a podcast, a book series. What are you just currently like, oh, I can't get enough of this?
I'll give you 2 different things. So I recently, because my girlfriend and I like to watch shows together. That's really what we have time for right now. And we've been binging the Castlevania series on Netflix.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar.
Is that? No, tell me about it.
So the Castlevania, it's literally based off the video game.
Oh,
so like,
wow.
If you ever play like the old NES or Super Nintendo Castlevania series, they've developed it into like a story, an animated series, and it's so good. The animation, the storytelling, the direction, it's so amazing.
So when you say you and your girlfriend are watching a show together, you are so busy all the time. Is it just like you actually get time to watch it together, or you watch this like you guys are apart but watching the same episode?
There's a little bit of both. There's been times where I'm like away from home and we're literally on the phone and they're like, all right, press press play now. We're trying to watch it.
Uh-huh.
But I, you know, we've been together for 14 years now.
Oh my gosh.
And so like, I feel like we have a really good understanding of how much we care about each other. And so it's like, we don't need to be next to each other every waking minute. But when we try to have a little bit of free time, we try to spend it together. And part of our bonding is like watching a movie or watching a TV show.
Is your girlfriend also Mexican?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you guys have been together 14 years and no one's pressured you guys into being married?
I didn't say that. Dude, we've been getting pressured since like month two.
Yeah.
Our parents are kind of like made peace with the fact that we're not, but they always ask. Now they've moved on past marriage.
They just want kids now.
They just want grandkids. Like, when am I going to get a grandkid? I'm like, dude, when you can pay for it.
Yeah, right. When you can afford it. Yeah. Yeah. When I can afford it. I get it. All right. What are you afraid of?
I am afraid of failure.
Okay. Like, have you experienced it? Like huge failure or like just roadblocks?
My sense of failure is being stagnant. So like I get stressed out when I feel like I'm not doing something. Like I it could literally be like a physical thing. It could be like a mental like writing thing. It's like I hate being in that mental space of where it's like I'm not doing something. And so I dread being in that. And I know it comes in waves. Like sometimes you're just feeling down, you know, it's been a tough week. It's been a tough day.
Yeah.
And you just want to like veg out.
Uh-huh.
But it's like the idea of vegging out is just stresses me out.
Wow. Hey, Angel, I'm gonna tell you right now, it's okay to do nothing.
It doesn't feel like that, dude. It feels like I should always be doing something. Yeah,
I think it's okay to do nothing because you're letting your brain and your mind and your heart, you're letting all of that reset. And I think it's okay. It's okay to do nothing. But yeah, I get it. I feel the same way. If you're on death row, what would your last meal be?
Death row. All right, I'm gonna say a plato de pozole with some cucumber salsa verde that my dad makes.
When you say pozole, is it like the what kind of meat is in the pozole? Because different
puerco.
Regions.
You gotta have pork, man. Pork. Okay. Pork pozole, red pozole. Dude, my mouth is watering just thinking about it.
You can get it right up the street.
Shit. Yeah, dude. But in particular, what I love about my dad's salsa verde is like it's a lemon cucumber green sauce that just cuts through the fat. So it's like citrusy and it's just amazing. I love pozole. But I'm glad the season's coming for that.
Yeah. So you're definitely pozole over menudo?
Yes.
Would you have menudo though?
Oh, I love
menudo.
Menudo, yeah. Birria, everything.
Yeah.
But pozole over menudo, especially reheated pozole the next morning.
Oh, it's the best.
When everybody, so my experience as a kid, because you know Mexican families drink when they usually meet up.
Yep.
My experience was like family would get drunk and then they'd be hungover, and I would wake up extra early and heat up the pozole, and I would get as many bowls as I could before everybody else would come.
Oh man. All right, last question. What's next for Angel Castro? What's next?
For comedy or just in life?
Just in life.
I want to be passed at other clubs. I feel like being a consistent comic is part of like showing up and being employed essentially by some of these clubs. I feel like it adds a little bit of legitimacy.
Yep.
But also I think it takes a lot of effort, and so that's why I feel like sometimes I'm not putting enough effort. I should be doing more to be able to get past at these other clubs and work with them consistently.
But do you ever like do you ever get stuck in that wave of thinking and then you'd stop and think to yourself, wait, I'm only in year four?
But there's no road in comedy. There's no one road, right? So mm-hmm. like I feel like for me it's like I'm older. I'm only in year four, but at the same time, it's like I'm in my 30s, man. I if I want to make this a career, I gotta show that I'm moving as if it's a career. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And everything I've learned about like successful comics like Kevin Hart, George Carlin, many more, George Lopez, Gabriel Iglesias. Like every time I hear an interview with them, there's just like I'm constantly working on something, is what I hear from them. And mm-hmm. so I want to tap into that. Tap into that work ethic about okay. doing something.
All right. I think you're well on your way.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Angel, thanks for stopping by this morning. This was a great chat. Did we talk about everything you want to talk about? Is there anything we left on the table?
Nah, man. Thank you for having me. This is fun. And Penelope, she wasn't as much of a bother as you say. She was super calm.
Well, yeah. I'm just kind of mellowed out. All right, man. Thanks for stopping by, Angel.
Thank you, Jesse.
Thanks a lot, man.